What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, more pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is May 14th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Look at Logan Allen, or AL, conditional, not confidential. Why? Because it was 6 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. It was against the Brewers, and not really the toughest offense, but that is kind of cool. This was a start conditional, not on the matchup, but it will be moving forward. No, this was the best command I think I've seen from Logan Allen in a long time. He had cutters and four-seamers upstairs to right-handers and then had sweepers underneath that I just haven't seen that kind of pitch separation from him before. It's awesome. And normally, in previous years, it was the changeup that was really good. Now the sweeper's kind of doing backdoor stuff, and I guess that's fine. Really good stuff against lefties as well for the rare amount that he faced. Long story short, I don't think that Logan Allen is that good. You know, he has the lower arm angle. Thank you so much, Lance Berzowski. Go, by the way, sign up for his Substack if you haven't already. It's a phenomenal one. Catches a lot of things that I don't get that quick data on that he does. It's very interesting. Also, it's really nice back and forth kind of he sees one thing, I see another. It's just another great person in the industry that you should respect and listen to. He mentioned Logan Allen changing his arm angle, and that explains a bit more of the sweeper focus, but I'm not really totally sold that Logan Allen can A, have this kind of command, and B, that he really does have enough stuff to produce like this with any sort of consistency. You have Jose Soriano against the Padres, 7 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, and 5 Ks. Super happy this worked out. Not really a big believer in this one. It was 1-for-16 whiffs on his splitter that he threw for like 15% usage. We've seen like 8-10% before. He upped it a little bit here. And then 31% strikes, yet this good of an outing because the sinker worked and the curveball worked. And it wasn't really even the best versions of those. The slider isn't really a big thing against right-handers, which I still feel like should be a thing, but whatever. I don't know. It's kind of wild for him to mess around and experiment with that splitter and also have that productive of a night against the Padres. Good stuff, Jose Soriano. Brian Ruiz is going to ace against the Yankees because the four-seamer is just so good upstairs. And it's kind of maddening because the other stuff just isn't very good. He had a sweeper they threw 18 times for a 39% strike rate. Yes, when it was a strike, it was good. And I think that's something I don't weigh enough at times with strike rate. Because you can throw a pitch 50% of the time if it's like Kodai Senga's ghost fork. And if that's always getting those whiffs on those, that's great. It serves its role, right? And the sweeper isn't actually supposed to be the pitch that induces outs. It's just the pitch that is, well, not outs in play, I should say. It is really just a different change of pace for the fastball. It's kind of why Eno Saris talks about how if you add a third pitch, even if it's mediocre, it's still beneficial. If it's in below average, it makes everything better, though. And speaking of Eno Saris, if you listen to The Craft, we have this weekly podcast that we do together when he is nice enough to be our guest. We have a special one today. It's at 4 o'clock. We're going to do the first ever live broadcast podcast. I'm actually looking forward to this. I have no idea how it's going to go, but I am confident that it's going to be fun and unique. And we'll be talking about the Yankees and Mariners live on playback.tv/pitcherlist. We'll be watching that game and doing a podcast at the same time. It's really cool. So come join us at 4 o'clock. You'll be watching it live there on Playback. It won't be on YouTube this time. And it's going to be great. So come on by, watch Luis Castillo versus Will Warren as we give our takes as we go. And we're just going to be hanging back, talking about random things during the commercials, all that kind of stuff. We'll be watching that game exclusively. You have Brandon Eichert opening for the White Sox for Jonathan Cannon. And I've been making this joke for the entire season. When are we going to be able to play the 1812 overture for Jonathan Cannon? And finally, I literally actually did play it myself as I wrote this roundup because he went 6 innings of 0 runs, 4 hits, 0 walks, and 6 strikeouts in relief as the follower here, I guess like 3 pitchers in or so. And yes, all those cannons going off. If you don't know that one, Tchaikovsky's on. It's the one with the cannons, okay? It makes all of, it's fun. It's great. So why did Cannon succeed finally? Well, first of all, it was the Reds. Even though it was Great American Ballpark, it's the Reds. The Reds are passive. They are a team that will just like let pitches go into the zone constantly for called strikes. So that means that the sinker that has been beat up a lot and not having and not coming with the best command, well, it lived over the middle of the plate and got a lot of the strikes and everything else. The sweeper, the cutter, the changeup. Oh, they all found the edges beautifully. And that's how this works. Now, Jonathan Cannon, we've seen it before and not have to throw sinkers down the middle, like actually going on the edges and also doing those things, living in the shadow zone. And hopefully we can get there. This was really a bit of a blame it on the Reds. But, oh, man, I really hope I can, I don't know, I can find more cannonballs and have that kind of night again. Because that is such a fun bit. I love Tchaikovsky. My gosh, he is the pop star of classical music. I'm serious. Framber Valdez against the Royals. 8 innings, 1 run, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. It's so funny. This is what Framber Valdez does, and it's why I talk about him so much in the offseason. Everybody looks at him as, like, the full season and thinks, oh, this is what he is. This is great. I know what I'm going to get. I'm like, you don't. You really don't. Because if you don't remember, Framber Valdez had a 4.39 ERA and a 1.27 whip through his first 7 starts. And his last 2 games were great. And you're going to be like, oh, everything is totally fine. That's just what he does. It was like 15 innings of, what, 1 run, 2 runs now? Last 2 games? Framber, all right. You are maddening and I'm happy for you. Chris Bubich. Oh, man. I have to keep moving him up the list because with Bubich, I've always been a little perturbed. Not perturbed. I don't know. I've just been a little disrupted watching him because it didn't always make sense. It's a fastball around like 92 and change that is effective upstairs, but doesn't really have all the qualities that we normally see from a four-seamer that would be effective upstairs. It's not like below average. It's just not exceptional, especially at 92. And there's a changeup that sometimes is down enough, but sometimes just around enough. And then the sweeper and slider are good. But like none of this really feels like it's incredible, but the collective results have worked really well. And this was the start that was a little bit different for Chris Bubich. It was 6.1 innings of 1 run, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts against the Astros. 22 whiffs, 39% CSW for a King Cole there. 22 whiffs and not enough for a golden goal because, of course, Dylan Cease exists. But we got 93.4 in the fastball. Not 92 and change, 93.4. That's what it was when he was a reliever last year. He also located that four-seamer upstairs beautifully. And then the changeup underneath. The cutter and the sweeper arm side a bit. It was actually a little bit weird, but it really played off of that fastball super effectively. So really love what Chris Bubich is doing. And obviously, I need to raise him up in future outings. There's also Jack Leiter, who went against Rocky Road. So, of course, we started him there. We don't love the overall consistency of Jack Leiter, and I still saw that in this one. He went dancing with the disco for 50% usage of sliders against right-handers, and that worked, while the left-handers saw, like, a whole array of random things. This was 6 innings, 1 run, 2 hits, 3 walks, 5 Ks. We are not out of the woods on Jack Leiter, or Jack Zippo is the better name. And Rocky Road is a beautiful, beautiful thing. I don't think that we are out of the woods at all. Okay, Andrew Abbott. I have a lot to say about Andrew Abbott. There's somebody actually who is just endlessly pestering me saying that I hate Andrew Abbott. Why can't you see how good he is? And all this stuff. And it's I have a lot to say to explain this. And I'm going to tell you all about it after this break. So Andrew Abbott, can we trust this guy? Well, first and foremost, this was against the White Sox. We have to blame it on the White Sox a bit, right? We have to do that. 6 innings, 1 run, 4 hits, 0 walks, and 7 Ks. And I also want to remind people that across the last 3 games, 2 of them have been about 4 innings, right? Now, he did have some explosive starts early on. That's why entering this one, he had like a 31%, 32% strikeout rate at 2.25 ERA. But when it comes to Andrew Abbott, he is very strange. And what I mean by that is it's 92-mile-per-hour fastball with bad extension, with a generally steeper attack angle. Not like the most steep, but it's steeper more than flat. And it's kind of a dead zone fastball. It does get a little extra horizontal run, but it's pretty dead zone-y. So the qualities that make up a predicted whiff for a four-seamer, something I call Fan 4 Plus, the Fantastic Four, of velocity, IVB, height-adjusted VAA, and extension, those four that aren't including location are an 88 Fan 4 Plus. That's 12% lower than a league average four-seamer at earning whiffs based on its qualities. Yet here, we got a lot of whiffs on it, 15% swing strike rate, and it's a season-long 10%. What I'm trying to say is Andrew Abbott really isn't showcasing a fastball that is elite, that is like should be demanding success. Fine. What are the other aspects? Well, it's really been a change of focus with kind of this slider and curveball, really sweeper curveball, I guess, blend that he has, and none of these are exceptional. There are times that the changeup actually is located really well down and away to righties. I love when he does that. And then you have a curveball that can be good and whatnot, but it's not like there's nothing in this that is above a 16% swing strike rate. None of his pitches, and the four-seamer is at a 10%, right? It's not like, oh, but Nick, that's really a 15% fastball. That explains it. Like, no, it's not. That should not be a 32% strikeout rate. That is just a very fortunate put-away rate at the moment where the guy is squeezing out far more than he should. The fastball velocity is under 92. This isn't really a polished pitcher that, if you remember when he first came up in 2022, we had that like really good month, maybe it was 2023, really good month. And we were all like, this doesn't make sense. And everyone was upset at us because we were saying, well, he's doing great. And I'm cool, Vargas rule it. But then, yeah, then it fell. And then everyone was out on Andrew Abbott, right? Like, this is the Andrew Abbott experience. He will have these games where it just kind of works and that's cool. But I mean, roll with it if you like. Go ahead. I don't see him as a top 50, top 60 starter. All right. Kodai Senga against the Pirates, as I was talking about the Ghost Fork before. Well, this was 11 for 41 whiffs and 71% strike rate. Doesn't even need to be a 55% strike rate pitch. It could be much better. This is amazing. 5.2 innings, 1 run, 6 hits, 2 walks, 7 Ks. But that bad whip, I don't care. This was so cool to see the Ghost Fork working. So cool to see the cutter working. Yeah, the fastball's underneath 95. It's not like 96 plus anymore. Fine. But this is great. And I like Kodai Senga in this moment. Yes, Pirates are going to do that kind of thing. But this is really the Kodai Senga you want. And he has like an array of 4 other pitches that he just kind of throws like 1 or 2 times each. Okay, whatever. But this is seeing the cutter working with that splitter or Ghost Fork, whatever you want to call it, actually getting whiffs again. That's great. Jeffrey Springs got a gold star for his start against the Dodgers. I had no expectation to see a rainbow in this one. In 7 innings, 1 run, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 4 Ks. Awesome, I guess, for him. What was very interesting is that Jeffrey Springs' biggest flaw has been the approach against left-handers. The changeup generally always works against right-handers, and sometimes it doesn't. That's really bad of a game. Fine. But yeah, it was good in this one as expected. Four-seamer didn't really get destroyed as it has against right-handers too. But really against left-handers, Jeffrey Spring hasn't had an effective slider. It's always been something that goes in the middle of the plate. He doesn't throw it a lot and all that kind of thing. This was a 39% overall CSW on the slider with 64% usage against lefties. He got this thing away from them. It was moving better than usual. That would be a huge thing for Jeffrey Springs if that is something that sticks around. I don't think it will be. I think it's one of those good nights, but maybe that is a big weakness for him solved. He still needs, of course, to develop the or return to the four-seamer changeup consistency that we've seen in the past with that new skill. And generally, when we talk about old skills versus new skills, you see a guy struggling in one area but then being really good in another. Majority of the time, the pitcher loses the new skill before the old skill returns. That is, you don't see an old skill go away, new skill comes up, and then all of a sudden, oh, now you get the old skill back, and now you're amazing because you have the new skill too. It is actually very rare for that to happen. So just keep that in mind. You have Quinn Priester against the Guardians, 5 innings, 1 run. That's nice. I do not want to go after this whatsoever with Quinn Priester. Max Fridays is going to ace, even though he didn't really have his best stuff. It was 5 innings, 1 run, 4 hits, 2 walks, 5 Ks. Some people want me to put him into tier 1 of the list. I don't think I should, because he's really a more ratio-focused guy with wins, and I'm really happy for this. But he is not that guy who's going to have like an 11-strikeout game randomly and really win your week. You know, unlike Cole Reagans will, or Jacob deGrom is going to just be absurd like this, or Zach Wheeler and Skeens in Scooble. Like, that's reserved for those kinds of guys. And maybe I should be giving Freed a little bit more love, but it's just like he's like the right gatekeeper, I think, for tier one. But if you want tier one, go ahead. You do what you want to do. It doesn't really matter. It's like, you know who he is. It's cool. Valente Biazzo, I did really well against the Cubs, but it was 4 innings. And he actually did new things, because the four-seamer, which is normally the thing with the cutter, was really bad. Like, 5 for 16 strikes. Oh my gosh. Jeez. And 90 miles per hour. So he had to do everything else, and it got him through 4 innings. All right. Cool. Tyler Holton opened for Keydair Montero, who went 3.1 innings of 3 runs and against the Red Sox. Away from Fenway, at least. But yeah, you don't want to do that. You want Spencer Schwellenbach, though. He went against the Nationals, got the win. What's interesting about this one, he went 7 innings, 2 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 3 Ks. But his first pitch of the ballgame, which was a 96-mile-per-hour four-seamer, up and away, and actually like slightly out of the zone to C.J. Abrams, was hit for a home run. What? That shouldn't happen. So, okay. So then it was 7 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 2 walks, 3 Ks after that, right? I'm liking Schwellenbach more. He was more of just like throwing effective strikes against a really bad team. They were more contact, though, than I would want them to. And there is something to say about that of like, hey, you should be getting more whiffs against a team like this. 11 whiffs are cool, but it's a little annoying. But fine, we'll take 7 innings, 97 pitches. Like, that's cool. Just Schwellenbach, hey, can you get a little bit more out of that curveball and not, you know, not messing around with the cutter as much, or not, but sorry, just getting more whiffs in general. I do like the fact that the four-seamer was not down the pipe. Like, he was very good at not giving in with four-seamers, and that's the Schwellenbach that we know from last year that was very successful. So I'm very encouraged by it. Just give me more whiffs. Mitch Keller got more whiffs and 8 strikeouts against the Mets. Whoa, 7 innings, 200 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 8 Ks. Now, think to yourself, what does Mitch Keller do well? What is the thing that when he succeeds that we can believe moving forward? He throws a lot of pitches. And if I told you that it was a sub 94 mile per hour four-seamer going 8 for 30 whiffs at 43% CSW, you would go, oh no, that's not it, right? Yeah, because that's what it was. And you probably saw a gif or two about the sweeper, and yeah, that was nice. You only had like 3 whiffs on it. It's the four-seamer being spotted upstairs to lefties. That's what worked in this one. Mitch Keller is always going to be this guy that like randomly will have these better starts. Okay. But I just don't want to go for it. I feel like the times he's helpful like this, do not. They get outweighed by the floor of just mediocrity. Dylan Cease against the Angels. Got 25 whiffs for Gallo's pole because once again, he found his mechanics from last time, and the forearm cramp that he had, I guess, is fine. 103 pitches. I don't know how the Padres can be like, yeah, after you have that forearm cramp, we're just going to push you 100 pitches. We're not going to, like, be a little careful? I don't know. 6.2 innings, 200 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 10 Ks. Did not get a win in this one because Jose Soriano. Man, that's just so annoying. Yeah, it's really good, except for the fact that he threw 6 pitches here, and none of them were the cutter. I understand it wasn't a blowout game. I just want the next time it's a blowout game for Dylan Cease to try the cutter. Just try it. It's the 6th inning. You're at, you know, like, you're up 7-0. That game, just try it. You gotta try it at some point. Ben Brown against the Marlins got us the streaming victory. 5.1 innings of 200 runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, 6 Ks. He's gonna get the Marlins again. I don't really have anything else to say here except, yeah, this is fine. It's just too good of a stream. I don't like him long term, but who cares? It's the Marlins and you got the Cubs on your side. You should have gotten a win. You should, but somehow Baiazzo and the crew lasted long enough here. You have Brian Bayo against the Tigers. 4.2 innings of 200 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks. He returned sub 57% strikes on his main 3 pitches. Sinker, changeup, and slider. Which meant that he actually had to throw a ton of 4-seamers. He threw more 4-seamers than sinkers, which should not happen with Bayo. I understand it's a lower arm angle and it can work upstairs. I get that. That is how Bayo can survive with 4-seamers. But 2 things. One, he does not have the command to do so consistently. And 2, he needs to be attacking with everything else. The 4-seamer shouldn't be the strike pitch. It should be the put away rare one upstairs at like 50-55% strikes because it should be missing too high up or then getting the whiff, right? So yeah, he's not what you want. He's not where we want Bayo to be. I don't want to go after this. I do actually see in the comments, actually, a good point from Breck OD about Cease. Like, they have a really good bullpen. They could have gone to that too. Totally agree with that. More frustration with Cease. But anyway, Michael Soroka against Atlanta. 4 innings, 200 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. Not the worst pitching from him. It's okay. Like, nothing is elite. It's really 2 pitch, 4-seamer, slider, with neither of them being elite. That's it. Like, you can't really go after a 2 pitch guy who's not finding his changeup again, even though he had 6 for 18 whiffs and changeups in his last rehab start. The last 2 games haven't been there. he's a streamer against poor offenses, Michael Soroka. I don't think you should be doing going after Michael Soroka moving forward unless it's a great matchup, okay? Robbie Ray had a really bad first inning and then was shut out after that. So 6 innings, 3 runs, 7 hits, 3 walks, and 9 strikeouts. Thing is, he had 30% plus CSW on everything, on all 4 pitches. Curves, changeups, sliders, 4-seamers. It was awesome. All right, he got out of a jam in the 5th. I felt so good about that. Then all of a sudden, he got out of it again in the 6th. I was like, oh my gosh, 180 pitches? This is amazing. 20 whiffs against the Diamondbacks. All right, I love this. He left 4 straight hits in that first inning, which was so annoying after getting his first out, and then settled down after that, right? So, like, baseball's weird. Robbie Ray's doing all the good things that we want him to do right now. He had a ton of strikes in the changeup, too. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you should be in on Robbie Ray. Those 3 walks are a little odd, considering that he had so many strikes. And I do recognize that Robbie Ray is not going to be, like, a 5% walk rate guy. Because he does get in these moments of just, I can't find a strike all of a sudden in this at-bat. And overall, it's good, but it's just like sometimes he loses guys, and I get that. But he's not like a 4-walk guy, 5-walk guy, like, no. Kyle Freeland against the Rangers, 6 innings, 300 runs. Hey, Bailey Special here with 7 base runners and 5 Ks on the road. Ooh, that's a wonderful thing. Cool, not going to touch him again. I mean, I wasn't here, so cool. Shane Bonds against the Jays, very frustrating. 4.2 innings of 300 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks. Oh, gosh, right? Here's the thing, Boz, just stop throwing that slider. It's a terrible pitch. You try each time to try and make that work, and you just throw meatballs on the pitch. Maybe try and throw it more like a cutter and keep it down, like low location 4-seamer. Maybe that will work. I don't know. But can you stop doing this? Because the curveball is still good. The 4-seamer is still good. The changeup is better than that slider. You get Miami next. Just don't, and you'll be great. Thank you. Brandon fought against the Giants. Really disappointing. It was the list curse because I had him as a featured image on the list. And of course, he's not going to do one of the next ones. Just how it goes. Anytime I want to give a guy a praise, finally, it doesn't work out, right? Long story short here, the left-handed approach I've liked from Brandon Pfaadt, that is changeups and curves doing really well against lefties. Well, against the Giants here, went 4 innings, 400 runs, 6 hits, 3 walks, 3 Ks because of that approach not coming through here. So that's how it goes. He had 50% strikes on both that changeup and curveball. Fine. He's okay. He was really close too. It was kind of right there low. It just wasn't perfect. And for the most part, he had a good sweeper to right-handers. So everything's fine. Just whatever. Landon Knack against the Athletics, 4.2 innings of 500 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk. We don't really want to go for Landon Knack, but the thing is, it was 8 strikeouts and 15 whiffs. Why? Because the changeup, the kick change actually was like really good. He had 2 different changeups. It looked like it was a circle change and then the kick change. Circle change replicated the fastballs more, and then the kick change was the big vertical drop difference. 9 for 31 whiffs is pretty ridiculous on this. And I wonder, you know, I know he's a tread guy, so I understand why he has it. The thing is, I think Kasparis comes in here. He is, I believe, for the weekend for Sasaki. And then you have 6 guys again, right? It's pretty much a 6-man rotation because you want to make sure Yamamoto goes once a week. It's possible that Landon Knack gets the boot out instead of Kasparis. But the fact that Knack is at 94 pitches here is very interesting. I'm not ruling out that Knack can't be effective. Like last year, it was 4-seamer slider. And the fact that he has this kick change to get whiffs now is an addition. But it is a question now, is the slider as good as it was last year? I don't think so. We'll see from Knack. I don't feel like I need to go and chase it moving forward, but maybe there's some more sneaky wins to have there. And then Jose Berríos is a great undulator. So it's 5.1 innings, 500 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 4 Ks. Because, of course, he had a sub-4 ERA after this, before this one, for whatever reason, and now it's above it. Like, we're going to go back and forth, and that's the life of the great undulator. All right, that is it for today. Thank you so much for supporting what we do. We are at 9,700 subscribers on YouTube. We are 300 away from 10,000. Can you please help us get there? We're like so close. I've been wanting to get us to 10,000 for a long time. It's the first big step for us as a YouTube channel as we do these pitcher video breakdowns. We do these live streams. We do these podcasts. We do interviews with players. Like if you haven't checked out Kay Povich and Pablo Lopez and Cole Reagans and Aaron Civale and Jameson Taillon, I don't know what you're doing. Go check that out on our channel. We have all of PitchCon, which is some of the greatest baseball presentations you will find on the internet for free here on our PitcherList YouTube page. Go check out previous years. There's hundreds of them. Like, seriously, just absolute baseball knowledge. So go check that out. But that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock. And may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.